is back in play. Like everybody, not just the Turkey, the vetoing of the budget line items. You can always count on the governors. Ever since Jeb Bush did it,
it's Charlie so much fun. It. It's to a veto sport. The turkeys.
I vetoed $300 million.
It's almost a contest to see who could do the most. Right. It's just part of the game.
But the legislation rarely, you know, think about it. It goes back to, I think you were in the governor's office, right, when the veto of, was it Senate Bill 6? Senate Bill 6.
It was amazing.
I mean, that was like a real, well, it was interesting because it's fun for the process. You know, you think, if you think that there's no chance of something getting vetoed, it's like the game ends at the third quarter. Nowadays, if you've got a shot at getting a veto, we're getting extra football game here.
We are.
That's what I like.
I will say the veto of Senate Bill 6 was a lot of fun because you would be out at a public event with the governor and you would have all like the teachers out there protesting. And then all of a sudden a woman would walk up with a giant box of petitions and just drop them on you saying veto Senate Bill 6. The citizen engagement around that was incredible. And it was fun to see it pay off and to see the governor actually veto that bill.
You like to see.
But I don't like Governor DeSantis vetoing my ban on straw bans.
Right. Because.
I mean, listen, I get the reason why he did it. I don't actually disagree with the argument.
Are you like, I agree with the part, like what he is saying, which is, I don't think that this is an issue that
this isn't a statewide issue that warrants a piece of legislation. Yeah. So elect local elected officials who's going to do what you want to do. So that's great advice. I can't wait to find lots of Republicans
to elect to our
city council.
Not in this town.
I know.
Not in this town. I mean, this is.
I look forward to finding transactional Democrats who we can get to reverse this ban. Or I just look forward to convincing all the businesses of St. Petersburg to start carrying reusable straws and offering as you purchase your drink to sell you a reusable straw with your drink, which I will then promptly throw away after I'm done drinking. But
or do what you're doing,
just give me a choice.
I mean, you're going to carry.
Oh, absolutely. My friend Jen is brilliant.
Concealed carry of
plastic straws. Yes. Maybe they'll legislate that and send me away to prison. I'm not sure. But my friend Jen has figured out if you take a toothbrush travel case, it's the perfect size for plastic straws, and you can fit about 5 or 6 in there, and they don't take up too much room in your purse, which was one of my complaints about reusable straws. They take up a ton of room in my purse. And then you have this dirty straw. Peter drinks Bloody Marys. That's disgusting to then put back in my purse. Like, is he supposed to like walk and go find a bathroom and clean it? I've just handed it back to the bartender and said, can you wash the straw for me? And then Ella drinks her virgin strawberry daiquiri or her apple juice. That's all sticky, gross stuff that I'm not going to put in my Louis Vuitton purse. I'm sorry.
Wow. That was the most bougie section of today's podcast about our.
Well, I like pink. And so my current purse is pale pink lining on the inside. It would be absolutely destroyed by any of your dirty reusable straws. So I'm just going to be traveling with my plastic straws. Thank you very much.
I think that's going to be the, you know how like people give out the Tervises?
Yeah.
Like that'll be the hot gift this December will be, you know, this straws from, you know, Southern Strategy Group, and it'll be a collection of 4 plastic or silicone straws. That'll be the hot new item.
Well, that's my other friend, Jen, who works for Coca-Cola. She did gift me some individual metal straws that are like packaged very cutely in a carrying case. With the little cleaner, because you have to have a special straw cleaner, by the way, for these reusable straws.
I love Jen, by the way, because she did give us the samples of
the new flavors of Coke they're testing for the holidays.
I had the cinnamon flavored one.
Cinnamon Sprite?
Cinnamon
Coke.
Cinnamon Coke?
Yes.
And then I had a second one.
A cranberry Sprite.
I liked the cranberry Sprite, I think. Like cinnamon.
Yeah, I don't remember which one you liked.
Cinnamon Coke, it hadn't been fleshed out yet. But I just love that.
All right, these were
We got to test those. Those were awesome.
Well,
Speaking of testing.
No, by the way,
Megan, who is our producer, she says that that's the funniest thing we do is when I come up with the stupid segues. Like, I would think
when you always call out like a segue and like we start laughing so hard we're crying.
In fact, yeah, we have to give out a great shout out to our producers at this point, because they are just coming.
We do not make it easy for them.
Right.
And at all.
They are doing a great job.
We record the interviews at the front end, then we come back in. And sometimes we don't do it at the front end. The front end's probably easier. Sometimes we start recording the podcast, then we stop and we record an interview. Then we go back into the podcast, and that's not even where the interview's inserted.
And I'm learning how to edit, which is terrible because I should stop.
Leave it to our editors.
And so Megan has to listen to this podcast and she transcribes the podcast and highlights things. And I saw her at a social or at Tiger Bay. I said, well, you gotta hate listening to me speak at this point. And she's like, no, I actually really like your podcast. And she's like, I think the funniest part is when like Michelle calls you out for one of your stupid segues. And so speaking of segues and stupidity.
Let's talk to someone who's not stupid.
There it is. Boom.
See? Right.
And about legislation and about all that good stuff.
Our good friend, Senator Jeff Brandis. And as we're like talking about this, I'm kind of mad. I meant to ask him how he felt about the veto on the bans on straws.
Why didn't we?
We forgot. It didn't make it into the outline, but that's okay.
All right, and here is State Senator Jeff Brandis. We now have, I think, the MVP of the 2019 legislative session, the Kawhi Leonard of this last session. I think the person that had the most bills ever filed by a single lawmaker, Pinellas' own State Senator Jeff Brandis.
Hey, great to be with you.
Welcome to the show, Senator. Thanks. My first question for you is, why do you sponsor so many bills? Because I feel like you have the special honor of sponsoring the most bills out of anyone. And that's definitely a choice.
Or do you have a problem like Bill Filers Anonymous?
I think it's partially both. I think it's, our team thinks about public policy in a different way. We think there's one big idea in every area of public policy, and we want to do that big idea. And some years they don't get done. And so, but we don't abandon those ideas. We think they're still good ideas. And so we refile the legislation. And so many of those ideas you'll see year after year after year, waiting to find the right, set of chairman or right opportunity to move the ball across the finish line.
I think it's important for everyone to know that I've had the pleasure of working with you since 2010, Michelle, Natalie, Senator Brandis, myself, we're social friends. Our children go to the same school. And I say that because I like to think about the arc that you have been on since 2010, 2011. And we think about it like I remember the and I'm sure you do the PolitiFact article. It said that you voted the most against the party's interests. Like you had the most independent votes when you were in the state house member. And there was also a couple of sessions where you would come home and you were a little frustrated. I think there was an article in the Times talking about you had wished that they had done more. And now, fast forward 8 years, you've had a lot of campaigns. You've had a race every 2 years. I look at it now and this is the session brought to you by Jeff Brandis. Yes, there were a couple of bigger issues that you really don't have your fingers in, like I think arming school teachers. But when you look at all of the debates that took place, medical marijuana, criminal justice reform, these aren't just issues that have come because of popular sentiment. These were issues where at one point you were the lone voice on. I think about Google Car. When one of your opponents actually sent mail attacking you for supporting the evil robot cars that were going to kill the old people. So, talk to us about where it started for you 2010, 2011, and where you think you are now in terms of your position in the session.
So again, it comes back to what's the big idea? What's the one big idea in the areas of policy that we started to work on? And originally that was working in transportation. I had spent 11 years in the military, had been a transportation officer. And so was searching for that big idea of public policy to work on. And so I turned to what I feel like is the legislator's single source of all great knowledge for new ideas, TED Talks. And I watched probably 100-150 TED Talks over I'd listened to them on the drives back and forth to Tallahassee until I found the one from Sebastian Tarun on self-driving cars. And then I listened to that probably 10 or 20 times over and over again to try to understand what's really going on here. And then I recognized this was the big idea. This is the big idea in transportation. This is the thing that is generational for us, right? I mean, imagine our great grandparents going back from the horse and buggy to the Model T, that's the level of transformation that we're going to see over the next decade, decade and a half, as we shift from human-driven vehicles to what's coming next. And that's, you know, shared electric and self-driving. But that idea is really what kind of set us off on this path, that there's other big ideas out there in these other areas of public policy. And let's just go do those. We'll let other people name the roads. We'll let other people work on the issues, you know. And what my team tends to think about is we generally don't work on kind of two areas of policy, education and healthcare, because everybody's working on those, right? I mean, you have whole committees that work on those specific ideas, but there's also where the speaker and the Senate presidents tend to focus their efforts. I mean, if you think back to President Gardner, that was a healthcare year. This year under Speaker Oliva, it's a healthcare year. So, under Corcoran, it was an education year. Under Negron, it was a little bit of education, but definitely under Gates, it was education, right? And so it's hard to play and push against the headwinds of speakers and Senate presidents. And so our team goes everywhere else. We want to focus on transportation. We want to do some really interesting work in the world of insurance, because frankly, in Florida, it's insurance is largely one of the larger fees we pay. It's almost like our version of an income tax is what you pay in insurance on your home or your car. And so whatever we can do to reduce that cost, and then continue to work on transportation. And then our new passion project, which has been for the last few years, is the big idea of reforming the criminal justice system.
Well, how did you get to criminal justice reform?
So I got placed on a committee on criminal justice, and I was sitting on a panel of five of us. There was just five of us in the room. It was a really small committee chaired by Greg Evers. And we were downstairs in the basement of the Senate. And it was, you know, very few people kind of showed up to this committee this one day. And we started hearing about people who had lost their lives while they were incarcerated. And we got to a story of a man who acted out of his prison cell in South Florida. And the guards put him in the shower and allegedly turned the shower all the way up and left him there for 2 hours. Came back and found him dead.
I don't think there's an allegedly about that. You're the lawmaker, so you have to go a little bit, but I would say there wasn't an allegedly to that.
So I had this kind of visceral reaction. Like, I mean, just I looked around the dais and I looked, you know, and I'm looking at this person standing at the podium, and I had this feeling like I was on a plane at 30,000 feet with an engine out and nobody at the controls, right? And I came back to my office and I was pretty visibly shaken that I had just listened to this. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of questions about what was going on here. We had, if you kind of go back in time and look at under Governor Scott, I think we had six different corrections secretaries at that point since his beginning of his tenure. And there was no real leadership. I mean, if you talk to the Senate president, the speaker, nobody was having a conversation about criminal justice. It's just, and frankly, that had been the case pretty much since I had joined the legislature back in 2010. And so I felt like this was one area that this kind of went along with our theme of playing in the areas that nobody else really wanted to play in. And so let's learn and study criminal justice. And the deeper I dug, the more troubled I became. To the point where, you know, one of the things I figured out was you could go to any prison you wanted at any time with your ID, but nobody had really done that in a long time. And so I started doing prison tours, and I started learning, and I started speaking to inmates, and I started speaking to guards, and I started going at off-hour times. And I got this incredible series of knowledge of just being there, walking around prison facilities. And then I began to work with national experts and figure out Florida really was behind the curve, and there was a lot of work to be done.
I think of the quote, the degree of civilization in a society is revealed by entering its prisons. And by that standard, Florida is second or third world. When you think about the funding that we give, you've brought it up several times that we don't even have basic like toilet paper and things for it. And it was an issue that we talked about with Chevron Jones, the incarcerated women.
Yeah, the dignity for incarcerated women.
which was an important bill that and Michelle, it was a very interesting podcast because Michelle, almost you were like your situation with the scalding. You couldn't believe that this was actually happening. And so she's finding about it in real time. And we said, we're going to do whatever we can to help get that bill promoted and passed.
Yeah, no, it was a great piece of legislation. But I think all of this, I mean, if you look at the criminal justice system in Florida, or at least the prison system in Florida, what you recognize is we have all of these symptoms, right? Our officer and inmate violence has gone up. Inmate to inmate violence is up. Contraband is through the roof. We have all kinds of problems. And those are all symptoms of the underlying disease, which is we don't have enough staffing. We don't have enough staffing for 96,000 inmates. And when you don't have enough staffing, these are the things that play out. We went from 8-hour shifts a few years ago to 12-hour shifts. That our staff is exhausted. They, you know, that we have stories of corrections officers being written up because they won't come in on their day off. Because and what happens when you're a warden and you know a corrections officer is doing something illegal or immoral, but you can't let him go because if you fire him, you get nobody else to take that shift. That's the situation we're in. And that hasn't radically gotten better over the last 3 or 4 years. Now we're putting more money towards paying guards more, but you still have prisons that are running at a 15-20% shortage of corrections officers. Imagine, Peter, if you would think about like a hurricane was about to hit Florida. And so we staffed at hurricane level, like minimum staffing, skeleton crew. That's, you know, everybody else is taking care of their families, but we're battening down the hatches and just keeping the skeleton crew at the prison to run it. But that's effectively what we run our prisons on all the time.
I think it's interesting when I'm up at Tallahassee, or even you see it on social media with an issue like this, you're able to, and this isn't to be flippant, but you're almost able to make it cool. That with the Uber and Airbnb issues, those were easy to get behind. They were the breakthrough technologies. But now I look on social media and I see that you're able to build a coalition around an issue that maybe people weren't previously talking about. And I think with like this issue, you've got the AFP, Skylar Zander people, you've got Chelsea Murphy, you've got your incredible staff who has been touted again and again. Greg Newburn is a outside influencer on this. How important is it on an issue like this to building a coalition of the willing on an issue really that maybe 3 years ago wasn't even getting into the newspapers or onto the websites?
I think it's vital. If you're going to go take on the interest that you've got to take on for this stuff, you've got to be armed with data. You've got to be armed with the research. You've got to know the issue better than the insiders. And I think that's why, you know, I liken it to, you can, in the legislative process, I use this analogy, like you can feel like you can act like you're building this ladder to the moon, where every day you're adding a rung, but you know you'll never get there. Or you can spend the time to work on building a rocket, right? And that takes years of dedication, and you've got to understand each individual part. But your staff isn't motivated like they would be, like, you know, if you're building, you added another rung, but you recognize the laws against you. For us, it's taking the time to build the rocket of criminal justice reform. And it's been hard because it's taken years and we've had a bunch of failures. Like we, you know, last year I was about as beaten up as I could get in the legislative process just because of our utter, I mean, it was like watching the rocket explode on the landing pad, right? On the launch pad. We were ready to go. We had everything teed up. We had a big piece of legislation on the last day of session that we were ready to send over to the House. We had everybody agreed to it. We had the governor's office that had signed off on it. And it blew up on the launch pad.
On that issue, I thought one of the interesting debates was the debate about fentanyl. And this may have been 2 years ago on the mandatory minimums on fentanyl distribution. I believe that the argument, this was the first time really that the legislature dealt with it. And there was one side that was saying, hey, a drop of this stuff can kill all of South Florida. And the other side of it was saying, wait a second, we're trying to bring down mandatory minimums on these other areas of the drug war. Why are we now instituting a whole new series of mandatory minimums? And that was just a very interesting debate because, I want to say that did not split along party lines. You had some Republicans for it, some Republicans against it. You had some Democrats for it. You had some Democrats against it who know what mandatory minimums have done to disenfranchised communities. And so I thought that was one of the more interesting debates over the last couple of years.
Well, I think it just highlights the more that you dig into this, the more you recognize that mandatory minimum policy is a policy failure. It was sold as one thing. It is played out as a very, very different thing with very, very unintended results. And it doesn't work. It hasn't led to a decrease in drug crimes. It just hasn't. It hasn't led to smarter sentencing, largely because you're just shifting power away from the judge to the prosecutor. And so we've been able to have these conversations and inform, with partners like Greg, with partners like Chelsea, but frankly, even with partners like the ACLU and Southern Poverty Law. I mean, criminal justice reform is one of these areas where you kind of have the Baptists and the bootleggers working together to come up with better policy for the state. And for us, we know what the answers are. When we've seen this stuff playing out in Texas and even Georgia, and states across the country have begun to reform their systems, but there's just more to do in Florida. But we know what the right direction is. I tell people, we may not have a map, but we have a compass, right? We know where True North is. We just need to follow that.
So you sound like much more positive about this legislative session than you had in past years when you've come home. You sound kind of a little bit recharged with what you've accomplished. And I don't know if maybe part of it's because it's a little bit different under the new governor. I felt like this whole session with the governor's office kind of being more involved in a variety of issues and not just focused on one issue. I felt like people were able to accomplish more. But what were you most proud of this session? Like, how are you feeling coming out of session?
I feel a lot better. I feel, I always liken like the legislative process is like the, if you think about kind of your first years in the legislature, it's kind of like the Matrix, right? You get this choice. You're going to take the red pill or the blue pill. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I took a pill. And like, oh my, I'm in the Matrix. And, this isn't the real world. That's kind of how Tallahassee is. But by year seven, by year eight, you're kind of like Neil at the end where you can start seeing the zeros and the ones. And that's where I feel like I'm getting to in the legislative process. Like I can kind of see the bullets when they're coming at me. I know the issues to stay away from and the issues to go towards. So I think I've just matured as a legislator, but I think I've got a fantastic team that I work with every day, Vanessa and Zach and Melissa back home. They're just great people to work with and they push me. But then I feel like we're working on the right set of issues. And part of me feels like if I wasn't working on them, I'm not sure they would get done. And that to me is what's exciting.
When you were early on, when you were a proponent of medical marijuana, you were practically like the lone Republican standing there. Could you have ever imagined the evolution of marijuana policy in this state in such a short amount of time?
It's been crazy. It's been crazy. I mean, we still don't have it right.
Right.
But I mean, it's at least it's something. And so I think we're making huge strides. And once, I think legislators, once they find somebody with courage, once they find somebody who's willing to stand up, and then you can begin, I mean, that's leadership, right? It's the ability to take on an issue, say, look, you I'm going to be willing to stand against whatever comes at me. But generally what comes at you isn't that bad. There's a little people snipe here and snipe there. But I'll tell you what turned for me on medical marijuana is when I had a deacon at my church come to me and say, hey, look, I just want to tell you thank you for all the things that you're doing on medical marijuana. My wife just got her card and it's been really helpful for her. And I was like, wow, if a deacon, this was 2 years ago, I was like, if a deacon at my church is telling me this, like something has changed in the atmosphere and we're going to be fine.
That's Jeff Brandis talking about Church by the Sea out on where they encourage You know, one of the things though with you, don't you find, and see, like we've, this has been a theme of our podcast. We're not big medical marijuana fans because we don't like the smokable side of it. And we don't want to go down to the park and have people smoking marijuana. And, you know, we're afraid of where it may lead, which is recreational. But that's what's great about, I think that's what's great about working with you is we can have these policy debates, but at the end of the day, we agree with 80% of each other and we just work on those as opposed to, or well, if you're not here with me on this one, then I'm going to punish you on this other thing down the road. I mean, I look at your whole book of issues and you've got so many that it's hard not to be, you know, on the opposite side of you. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 20% of the time you just have so many policy issues, which brings me to a question. I want the world to know, what does your summers look like? Because I think you've always talked to me about, you kind of go out to Cupertino and you go out west and you do some deep dive research. And so other than when you're doing amazing things like bringing home a new daughter from China, which is its own great adventure, what does your summers look like in terms of your homework?
So we spend a lot of time on, you know, if we think back to the big ideas, who are the experts in the country that understand this stuff better than anybody? You know, I'm getting on a plane today. I'm flying to Columbus, Ohio to work on transportation policy with experts from around the country. But it's really, why aren't legislators picking up the phone? People, what I find is people will pick up the phone for a state rep or a state senator from Florida. So what happens if you get on a plane and go visit those people? You know, and so much is happening in Silicon Valley. Why aren't we going out there two or three times a year? You know, why don't we have a delegation from Florida that's going out visiting these facilities on a regular basis? Why doesn't Florida have a presence every year at the Consumer Electronics Show where we're championing small businesses and growth and startups from Florida? To me, that's where Florida needs to be. We need to be in California. We've got to be attracting talent. We've got to be looking for new opportunities, but we've got to be talking to the experts.
So, all right, we want to ask you two questions before we let you go. We have Stephanie Smith joining us in the program today. It's been a big session for Uber, which is kind of interesting. People think, okay, they've got the preemption on the ride sharing, but that's not where, that was just the end of the beginning for them in a way. And so what do you see in the future for ride sharing and kind of I think, and you and I have geeked out on this, and I know you geek out with other people about it, but it changes everything. If you have a fully implemented AV driverless technologies in your community where you're changing the shape of development even because, wait a second, you don't need parking anymore because your car can drop you at your office and then go hover 20 minutes outside of town, and therefore all the rules of development change. And therefore, if all the rules of development change, everything in your community changes at that point because you don't need to build, you know, you don't need to build 10-story parking garages. And it's like you look in Tampa, they're facing that issue right now. They're trying to build all these new buildings and they're like, wait a second, why are we building parking garages? We're not going to have, people aren't going to need to park cars down here. So what's going next on the whole transportation, emerging technologies, AV? I know that's a big question, but if you can bring it down.
Yeah, here's the future of transportation. The future of transportation has three components. It's shared, it's what Uber's doing, it's what Uber's kind of led the way in. It's kind of the shared economy. It's electric and it's self-driving. I think, you know, 5 years ago, if you had asked me how this is going to play out, I think the self-driving piece was going to be one of the first pieces we were going to see. It's not. I think now the shared and the electric really are taking off. And I think the next between 2020 and the 2030, the biggest change you're going to see is the electrification of the fleet. What I mean by 2025, probably 25-30% of the cars that are sold in America will be electric vehicles. And I think that will be a substantial shift from how we've thought about infrastructure in the past, and will have profound impacts on a variety of different areas. Let's just take a few. The big thing about electric cars is there's essentially no moving parts, right? You go from a car and your internal combustion engine has probably 1,500 moving parts to a car that has maybe 50, maybe 100 moving parts. And so you basically move away from the dealer network. You service centers come under a lot of pressure. Gas stations may or may not be a viable business by 2040, 2045. So you begin to see this reshaping of things just on electrification. So electrification is kind of the first rogue wave that hits the auto industry, followed by automation and the self-driving features. That's the second rogue wave that hits the auto industry. And I think of the major autos, you'll see mass consolidation amongst the major auto manufacturers over the next few years and huge disruptions. And that's going to play out for cities as well. And you can see some of the leaders in transportation or leaders in architecture already starting to make this move. For example, Vinnick, when he's building his buildings, he's building his parking garages so that they're convertible, so that he can build his buildings down over time. And what I mean by that is he's got flat floors, higher ceilings, so that over time, maybe it's 2030, 2050, whenever, he can actually build his buildings down and take that parking space and turn that back into usable office space. It's a pretty radical concept, and he's one of the early adopters of this. It's more expensive to do it, but you think the buildings he's building in downtown Tampa, they're going to have a 75-year, 100-year lifespan, right? Absolutely, it's going to be pickup and drop-off zones, and parking garages look radically different, but it begins to reshape how you and I live on an everyday basis. But it starts with the change in electrification and then moves to the change in automation. And Florida's really become a leader in that.
I read so much about technology. I don't think folks understand it's not revolutionary. The societal level changes that are coming, it will not be in the next 5 years, but in 10, when you just talk about all these things that are going to happen. You know, Uber is not a ride-hailing company. That is not the business they want to be in. They want to be in the transportation business, developing the entire highway, roads, transit, all of that.
Yeah, they're going to be the aviation business. I mean, I run my big self-driving car conference, and it's in Miami this year. One of the things we're talking about is vertical takeoff and landing, because in a town like Miami, one of the more interesting things to talk about is how you've got developers who have their sky rises, their 40, 50 story condos. And instead of putting pools on the roofs, they're putting landing pads, because they know that by 2030, 2035, they want to be able to offer a vertical takeoff and landing.
Who doesn't have a landing pad yet? I mean, that's right, so right, 2018.
Exactly. Listen, it's very SimCity.
All right, real quick, what's next for next session? What are you working on? We know you will start filing bills by Memorial Day. So
I think we got some in drafting.
What do you have on the docket for next session?
Well, I think, again, we're going to really double down on our series of big ideas. You know, transportation, we did so much this year, whether it was the latest and greatest self-driving car bill, non-emergency medical transport passed, scooters passed. I think we're going to continue to work on what's the next big idea in transportation. How do we continue to focus on that? I think you should look for us to continue to focus on what the big ideas are. So in transportation, it's shared electric self-driving. In criminal justice, it's this idea of better allocating resources. So the big conversation from nonviolent offenders from 85 to 65%, allowing resentencing opportunities, placing hope back in the prison system. By utilizing those resources on things that we've shown to actually reduce crime, like putting more law enforcement officers on the street, updating the state's crime labs, those types of things, which we know work. In education, it's the idea of gamification of education. I had a bill that hasn't made it across the finish line for the last 2 years for one reason, but it really is on kind of what the future of education looks like. And that's called competency-based or mastery-based learning. And so we think that's where education really wants to go, is to more of a mastery-based system. And so we're focusing on that area of policy. On the insurance space, we're going to continue to be the stalwarts as far as how do we lower costs for consumers? How do we add more competition and make sure we have a robust insurance market? And then we're going to dabble in a few other areas that we just find interesting. But I think you'll always find our team focused and working on what we think are the big ideas. The things that people may not understand right away will change the paradigm over time. But we want to be the angel investors in public policy. That's kind of where we've positioned our team to be.
Well, is that enough geeking out today, honey, for your Monday morning?
I always appreciate geeking out with Jeff Brandis. I always walk away learning more.
That's a great name for a podcast.
That is a great name for a podcast. Geeking you guys out. Should start it. But now I always walk away learning more and kind of inspired about what's next. And I just wanted to know what's next for your family. I know Natalie is very happy to have you home after legislative session. So before we let you go, what are your plans with your family for the summer?
We are just getting away. You know, so my kids are of that age. They're 10, 9, 8, and 5 now. And so this is our big summer to get away. So we're going to do a couple big trips. We're going to do do a lot of travel in the summer. And just, I haven't gotten to spend last summer. I was campaigning all summer long. And so this is really a family summer and I'm looking forward to it. So we're going to do family, some policy in between and really just kind of recenter ourselves. I think that's the hardest part of this job. I always tell people is the fact that I'm gone for 3 or 4 months out of the year. And it's hard as hell to be a dad from, you know, through the doorbell even FaceTime. It's just, that's just not the way parenting needs to be. And so I really want to just kind of reconnect with my kids and love on them through the summer. And we'll see what happens after this.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your day. Give our best to your lovely wife, Natalie. I know that we have a lot to, you know, your constituents have a lot to thank her for. She holds down the fort for you while you're gone. Because you're right, it is hard for families to be separated. And I admire and appreciate the way you guys are able to strike a balance. And we appreciate you taking time for us today.
You got it. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
It's awesome to have Jeff on. And if he's on the podcast, we know that he is back home. And I know that he missed his family, wants to get back with Natalie. And I know, hopefully, we'll see him at Flag one time before. We've only got, what, eight more Flag
ceremonies of the year. And that's going to break my heart.
And then
she's not going to be in the front row anymore because the kindergartners are in the front.
Flag is when they do the Pledge of Allegiance and all that good
prayer
stuff.
And a patriotic song every day. And then school-wide announcements, like all the kids get to share. They got a pet, if they got a participation trophy for soccer. There's a lot of participation
trophies.
And
they finished 16th place in
a golf tournament.
Badminton.
Yeah, so. It's super fun. It's a great way to foster community, which is part of what we enjoy.
That was an uber great interview with Jeff Brandis.
So let's talk to the queen of Uber public policy herself, my best friend, Stephanie Smith. Today, I'm really excited to have one of my favorite humans in the world join us on the podcast. I lovingly refer to her as Ella's best friend. She is my best friend, my former boss, in many ways a mentor of mine. But to most people, she's known as the senior public policy manager for Uber. We'd like to welcome to the podcast Stephanie Smith.
Good morning. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. I've wanted to have you on for a while, not because I love you so much, but because you are very impressive professionally. But before we get
she
to
is
that,
a, can we?
Okay, go ahead.
She is a Golden Rotunda winner.
True
for,
story.
Best in-house lobbyist, which
and is, to be very clear, I did not tip the scales on that.
No.
That's right.
In fact, this last time she was in Tally Madness, who did you end up losing to? It was a close race. Was it Gus?
It was Gus Corbella.
It was Gus Corbella.
You would mm-hmm. only be able to lose to Gus because Gus is, he works it. I mean, he works, he gets the entire Greenberg Traurig, you know, international law firm. There are paralegals in Jakarta that are having to fill out the Tally Madness form. And so that one was like, that was literally like Golden State Warriors versus Houston Rockets. No, just because you lost, you were still, you know, one of the greatest of all times. But before you get into your thing, I just want to say she is so universally liked and admired in Tallahassee. I would say of all the lobbyists that I interact with, I would say like top five, like people.
I can tell you why she's so universally liked, because do you know what the number one thing she teaches everyone who works for her? To be kind to everyone, treat everyone how you want to be treated, and to make sure that you are taking care of people who are coming up behind you, and make sure that you mentor people and take the time for it. That's why everyone loves 100%. Stephanie Smith.
100%. Oh, you guys, I wish you could see my blushing.
Oh, I can see your blushing. I can see it. I can imagine it. I love when you blush.
Thank you.
So we are recording on Monday. Yesterday was Mother's Day. And one of the things I admire most about you is your role as a mother. When I first met you, TJ was a kindergartner. And it's crazy that I now have a kindergartner and you have a little man who is going to be leaving your nest soon. Yep. How did you celebrate Mother's Day?
So we were in Tallahassee this weekend with my mom, who is like TJ's second mom. I could not have done it without my mom's help throughout my entire career. So we celebrated together and just had a nice dinner with the family at home. It was relaxing and amazing.
That sounds glorious. I want to say it's incredible what you have done. I don't know if the scared young girl who in college had a baby and then went on to raise a child as a single mother could have ever imagined this beautiful career you built for yourself. It's really a testament to how hard you worked and to the type of life you wanted to provide for your son. And, you know, you have a lot this Mother's Day. You had a lot to celebrate because a lot has come to fruition with, you know, the IPO happening, Uber. You had such a huge successful session. What has it been like for you to juggle these two important parts of your life? I mean, I know that being a mother is the most important role to you, but you have managed to build this enviable career at the same time. And it's impressive.
Oh, I appreciate you so much for saying that. I can tell you at times I sometimes have a bit of imposter syndrome. I think you and I have talked about that before, where, you know, with each step in my career, kind of feeling like, wow, what am I doing here? Is someone going to figure out who I am, where I've come from, and take it all away from me? And none of the steps in my career I take for granted. I've always, I work 110% with knowing that my son is constantly in the back of my mind. He's my why. He's why I work so hard, why I push myself in every job and career I've ever had. And knowing that, you know, everything that I'm instilling in him and confidence and pushing him through all that he has overcome, I want to mirror and be an example to him in my career. So yes, they are definitely very closely aligned, and people that are very close to me and know how important my son is and our journey and what he's been through and what we've been through together as a family know how important that is and how special he is to me. And why it was so, you know, why the last few weeks, I'm pinching myself, ran right into a church yesterday to just thank God for all of the blessings and things that I've had in the last few weeks. I'm very grateful.
Where was your favorite place to take TJ on your travels? Like, where did I admire you from afar because you travel by yourself, but you also, you take TJ some amazing places where I actually think about it. I'm like, they must have an incredible relationship for a teenage boy to want to like hang out with his mom still. But you guys go to great places and it seems like you show him great experiences. It isn't just like, oh, we're here at this posh hotel and blah. Right. We're at this music festival instead, or we are going to go to a interesting place in Europe that, I mean,
they're
I love
Stonehenge.
Right. So where was your favorite, where was the spot that really meant something to you all?
I would say Norway. It's a very interesting kind of obscure place that's probably not on a lot of folks' list places to go, but it's somewhere that my son TJ has always wanted to go. It is, we have Norwegian heritage on my mother's side. He's studied it. He's always been fascinated by the fact that we have family ties to Norway. And it was an adventure for both of us, something that we weren't, I had a hard time preparing for on my own. And so I think we grew stronger as a mom and son in our relationship. Traveling overseas can be very stressful. And we had some good times and we had some tough times that we had to get through together. But I would say that was one of our most memorable trips. And he grew from that. And I want him to be able to have the love for travel, just like I've had. So I think we got it.
Is there Uber in Norway? I assume.
Yes, there was.
Or is it called Uber cities. Or something? Is it Uber?
Is there Uber? Uber? Is there Uber in Barcelona? I'm just for our trip. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It's, but we've had some issues in Spain.
So then I won't use that. Thank you. I'll stick to the town car service from the hotel.
Exactly.
It's a little, big believers in Uber, but when you're in a big crowded city like that, it's harder to, you can just flag down a yellow cab or whatever. Whereas like you're waiting for the Uber and you're like, is that my Uber or is that just
I have no problem using Uber in New York City. I find that to be like during the holiday season when cabs are very hard to come by.
Right.
Uber makes life much easier for navigating the city. And it's generally about the same price, if not a little bit cheaper than a cab would be.
Yep, I agree.
We're such, so let's take the Uber conversation back, right?
I wanted to ask about your career. One more thing, if that's okay with you.
No,
we can dive deep into Uber. But you have had such an interesting career, and I'm going to say you cannot use Uber as the answer to this question because that's just too easy. It's your current job.
Yep.
What has been your favorite thing that you have done in the political process? It doesn't have to necessarily be a job. It could be an event. It could be a piece of legislation you worked on in the governor's office or at any of the other corporations you've worked for. What's your favorite thing you've done?
So I love this question, and I can answer it pretty quickly because it stands out as one of the highlights of my career. And that would be
It's the day you met me. I'm just kidding.
Well, then,
just kidding.
Life changing. But we did work on this together. But it was when we were in the governor's office, Governor Chris, first legislation as governor, which was the restoration of rights. And it was a bill that I felt so proud of, especially working with the families impacted that he highlighted during that bill signing and the impact that it had on them and their families and the ability for them to be able to have their rights back. It was extremely powerful and overwhelming. And I remember thinking, this is why I'm so glad that he was elected to office and proud to work in his office.
And you were the director of external affairs at the time. And I don't know that a lot of people, I know that, like the insidery people who listen to our podcast know what that means, but a lot of our other listeners don't. That meant that you were literally the one finding the families, vetting them, and deciding how to tell their stories to highlight this piece of legislation.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so in our role in external affairs, we were so intimately involved in those stories and telling those stories and making them feel comfortable. And oftentimes when they, didn't want to be in the forefront of some of these issues, it was so powerful.
It really was.
Definitely.
Your heart had to be crushed like mine when the restoration of rights got reversed. Yep.
It was disappointing for sure.
It really was.
But
now we're full circle, right? It's
That's
been accomplished
exactly right.
again, and it's great to see because like you, I felt like that was an important thing we did.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do.
Speaking, it is the right thing to do.
I'd like to ask another background question.
Go ahead, have at it.
You're a prominent person of color in a industry that is severely lacking in it, and we've talked about this on so many times. If you remember, I think a friend of ours, Sean Pittman, came to me, I think after we published the second or third edition of
Influence. It was
the
first edition.
And, you had said it was a lot of penises. And
I
then,
did say that.
Then Sean said it's a lot of white faces. And I, my knee-jerk reaction, number one, is to take try and take the blinders off. But it's hard because the industry is 95% white, and then it's probably 70%, maybe 80% male. And so what has it been like to overcome that? But what are you doing now to make sure? Because I really believe the female issue is sorting itself out. Like I think the best young lobbyists, for the most part, are from the female cohort. Whereas, and I don't know that that will hang on for the next 10 years, you know, but it just seems like the young lobbyists that are making it into influence, more of them are women than men. I don't know if that's necessarily happening on the black white issue.
Yep.
It seems to be happening a little bit on the Hispanic issue. There are some faces of color coming from that community, which are making it into the influence industry. But, you know, I'm always challenged. I don't want to be superficial and picking lobbyist X because they're the, you know, just to work in something.
You don't do that.
I don't do that. But I also don't want, you know, you got to take your blinders off. You've got to realize, you know, you've got to take your blinders off. So two questions there. What has it been like to overcome that challenge if you see it as a challenge? And what are you doing now for the next round of young female and faces of color?
Yep. Well, I will tell you, it's something that I've kind of always had in the back of my mind, but I never looked at it as an issue of being a hindrance of me getting where I wanted to be in my career. I will tell you, though, almost over-indexing to the point where I've had conversations with, say, for instance, in my career, Senator Roussan, who pushed me and said, Stephanie, while we know it's not, you know, that you don't feel it's an issue for you personally, we need you to lean in here more for those, you know, behind you looking to move forward. And I'll give this example, and I hope he's okay with me sharing it publicly here, but when I was external affairs director, our office was located in the basement of the Capitol. He pushed on the chief of staff and Governor Chris to lift me up and to help push me to fight for promotion and to be on plaza level so that we could have that representation on plaza level. I was fine with not being on plaza level. I'm a worker. I want to be in the trenches. I want to push forward. He said, Stephanie, I get it. This is about more than just you. This is about the representation and what folks outside and behind you will see. And I will be forever am grateful to Senator Roussan for pushing me to do that. I haven't told a lot of people that.
You have not even ever told me that.
Right.
I mean, and you and I were, I worked for you then. We were best friends then. I mean, we're still best friends, but like, that was the height of, I was talking to you like 10 times a day. I did not even know that.
That's right. It's because it's kind of tucked away and I don't want, you know, I try not to make it an issue, but he helped me see that. And I try to take that now moving forward when I moved to AT&T, when I've moved to Uber. This session, actually, we started it last session where we have now dinners and happy hours, you know, with me particular with black female lobbyists to, if they're not lobbyists, if they're in government affairs, if they're aides or assistants, just once a week, every other week, let's share what we know, let's share learnings, let's share opportunities and talk about how we can help lift each other up. Because I do think there is a talent pool out there, but we need to push them, folks like myself, just like I was pushed. And so that would be my answer to the second piece about what I'm trying to do. And to try to mentor and to give those opportunities and networking for the folks kind of coming right behind me to take my place.
Smith and I have such an interesting working relationship because she has to, she is like a defender of of whenever I step into stuff. And I feel like you are the radar, like for me, where, you know, you'll get a call and you're like, hey, isn't Peter your boy? And you're like, I don't know. What did he do? And then it'll bubble up. But you also, and you and I will talk about it, and I will, it makes me smarter every time. But there are also times where you will push back and you say, why are you giving him crap? He's one of the few people who's even open to whatever you're discussing, you know, and we've gone back. I don't know. It seems like every 3 to 6 months, there's some place where you're like, okay, I need to dedicate myself now to the text messages I'm going to get about what Peter just put out on Twitter. And you're one of many people that has that role.
I think Stephanie has the same problem with Twitter as I do. Like, we really sometimes wish we could take your Twitter away.
Right. Well, you know, I wish there was an edit button on Twitter. I mean, because you do put out stuff and you're like, no, that's not what I meant. And people are like, nope, too late. You're done. And I'm like, that's wait a second. I said this over here. And so, and then also, and Michelle knows this, like whenever I'm in Tallahassee, like I feel like you're my, like, you know, my bestie, because it's like we get together and I don't know, we're both safe around each other. And
you know, I'm never going to ask you what you were doing or harass you if you were Stephanie. You're good. You're safe. It's fine. You're with family.
We just get in the corner of the Governor's Club and kind of like toss barbs and make fun of all the other.
I love it.
We're wondering, we're like, really? That person's in here with that person? And you're like, oh boy. And you're like, now we know why there's a rule about no photographs from the Governor's Club.
Exactly. I'm happy to be your person.
So this was a big session for Uber. What were you most proud of the session?
I think what I'm most proud of is, you know, gone are the days of the 2014, 15, you know, fights locally at the state level as to whether, you know, rideshare is legal or not in the state of Florida. And we've moved now into, you know, into our business and the how we can impact the state, the communities, you know, and our product and our technology. And so one of the bills I think that highlights that the most is the non-emergency medical transportation services bill, which basically allows rideshare companies to be able to provide transportation to those looking, you know, seeking to get rides to their doctor's Medicaid recipients, to get rides to appointments. And we know that the missed appointments are a large part of, you know, no-shows, late appointments, missed appointments are a large part of a huge cost to the state Medicaid budget. And so is there a way that rideshare companies like Uber can provide those rides for, you know, non-emergency, right? Folks that are able-bodied, that can get curb to curb and in their appointments and a cost-efficient, you know, time efficient, reliable way. And so I think that one's really going to make a huge difference. And I'm proud to say that Florida was one of the first states in the country to pass that bill. And so grateful to Senator Brandis and Representative Perez for being our champions there. That's the one I'm the most proud of.
And it is an amazing bill, and I'm so grateful that it passed. It's also kind of crazy that it had to be passed through legislation. Like, it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. It's a no-brainer that we should make it easier for these people to get to their necessary medical appointments.
That's exactly right. So this one, I think to your point, I think it was, we educated folks early. We worked hand in hand with the Agency for Healthcare Administration and the governor's office and answered everyone's question. And because it was such a no-brainer, we did not have any no votes through the committee process or on the floor. And so I think that's, you know, we worked on this as a team, you know, with a bunch of great consultants, but I'm super proud that we were able to tell that story that, yes, it is a no-brainer. This makes sense.
When you think about no votes, and you think about where the legislative battle started and where it was, I think there were times, you know, Jennifer Green in David Simmons's office just rewriting and writing and rewriting the legislation to pacify a member or two. You know, I think it's, you know, I go back with Uber till 2012.
Yeah.
When I think Travis first came, not Travis. I can't remember who the Florida representative was, came in, and I had seen it in DC and I was up there for the summer or for the election cycle. And I thought it was great. And I was like, yeah, let's bring this here. And I remember telling them, and this is my favorite story about Uber, I said, wait a second, you got to realize there are folks, and I use Jimmy Smith as the example, because he's from, I think he was from Citrus County. I'm like, Jimmy Smith will be with you on this issue. He is for liberty and less regulation. But A, he doesn't know what the word Uber looks like other than its regular connotation. B, they don't even have taxi cabs in a lot of these very rural Florida districts. And they were coming from, hey, we, you know, we're from DC and we can put Uber everywhere. I'm like, no. Let's start from scratch. And it was such an interesting process that I guess it was 5.5 years from when I was involved and longer for everybody else, getting just the basic education about what ride sharing was. And then I think the other great part, and Michelle, I think, actually represents this the most. This was not about taking anything from the taxi cabs. Michelle, did you ever use a taxi cab before? I mean, in St. Pete, Florida?
I have never sat in a taxi cab in any city other than the city of New York.
And so she had never, you know, she had never hailed a taxi cab. And now, you know, so.
Oh, that's inaccurate. I took taxis in Orlando when I was in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were
not as an adult.
You were not doing like what we do on Saturday night, which is let's take an Uber down to downtown.
No, yeah, and then I was let's take not one back doing that at
and
all.
And maybe bounce around in between. Like that was not happening. So those dollars that the Michelles of the world were spending, that was not taking from Gypsy Cab Company. That was new transportation. And so I just think it is one of the most fascinating public policy journeys of this decade, the way you got something that nobody knows what it is.
Yep.
To where
could you have
widespread.
Ever imagined the partnership with Mears?
Never.
Quite honestly, at the beginning of this journey. I mean, it is amazing how much it's changed and grown.
Yeah, tell us about that one, because that was the battle of 2015, 2016.
I'm so proud of that one. And one thing I'll just add to what you're saying, I mean, not even a company that's not even 10 years old, you know, that we're kind of shifting the conversation here, but it's been a volatile one. I'm very happy things have kind of calmed down, and a partnership I'm the most, one of the most proud of is the Mears partnership, which last year we entered into conversations with them early in the year to have their product on our platform. Their product is, I mean, you could say, I feel proud to say it's a very good product. It's one of the best companies in the country, and especially their Black Car service. And, you know, we have had an opportunity to have Uber Black brought back to the Orlando area with the Mears cars and have since expanded that to have Uber Taxi in Orlando. And you know, who knows what, TBD on what the next is, but what a great way to tie a bow on that story you know, just 2, 3, 4 years prior, you know, single-handedly worked against us successfully to us being able to have statewide regs, and then to be able to 1 year after passing statewide regs come together with this exclusive partnership.
So what about our favorite aspect of Uber, and probably the most important part about Uber, the greatest development
in the history of the world? I may have had more children if it had been around when Ella was one or two. Uber Eats is, yes. I mean, that's quite possibly the biggest game changer of all of this.
Oh, for sure. It's one that it's an exciting part of our business. I mean, who knew? I think, you know, Florida has some of the top markets in the world for Uber Eats. Orlando, Tampa, Miami. It's
what
it's
does
an
that say about
product.
About our communities? Like, I see the stats that it's
we
like
are lazy.
Our lazy butts are the ones that are getting. I think it has to do with the fact that, like, honestly, we're just so terrible for transportation.
Yeah, our transportation is just so bad that it's just easier to make someone else do the frustrating driving.
Like, I don't want to go drive over. It's not, there aren't neighborhood restaurants for us. Like, it's a 20-minute drive to go to a decent restaurant, right? Isn't that, I mean, there's a few, but.
That's exactly right. Well, and I would say, too, the variety on Uber Eats and other platforms like Uber Eats has helped, right? But when we were growing up, it was pizza and Chinese food. We didn't have a lot of options. And so, you know, now they're, now you're trying restaurants you may not have ever even walked into, which is great for the, you know, great for those businesses, those small mom and pop restaurants and food trucks. We're even seeing where food trucks are doing well on the platform. So
I really love the ice cream delivery, the random ice cream delivery. I mean, that's great.
Well, I mean, the smoothie for a little girl named Ella Joyce, like, cause I don't want to go to the smoothie shop. That is like an hour long process to get a smoothie. And I know that that sounds lazy.
Whenever
but it's
she
like,
starts coming down, not feeling well, I load her up on smoothies with all of the immunity boosters. So yes, it is a pain to get to the smoothie shop. So we do order a lot of smoothies in our house.
How do the
time is valuable.
That's right. Time is money.
How do the economics work on that for the drivers? Like, cause we tip and everything like that, but they're doing okay, right? I mean, they're not.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're receiving, you know, we work out agreements. The team works out agreements with the restaurants, and then there is a service fee and all of that where drivers are compensated for each trip. Of course, tips, you know, definitely help. But yeah, that's where you see, start.
We appreciate the app having been updated to allow tipping in the app. That was a big deal for a while because they were getting not enough tip or way too much tip because who has cash lying around this day and age?
Exactly.
What is the what's the next big thing out of Uber? Like, you know, I know the big picture stuff and I get some of that, but like, is it the rewards points program? You know, what tease us? What are we getting next?
Yeah, I think some of the stuff I'm excited. Obviously, you know, we're getting into the first mile, last mile, you know, with the micromobility, aka the scooters and the bikes. We've got those about to roll out in the city of Tampa soon. So be on the lookout for that. We've got, you know, I think some exciting, our CEO announced, you know, that we're doubling down on autonomous vehicles. With that legislation passing here in Florida, you can imagine, you know, Florida is open for business for that type of technology. So, you know, I'm hopeful that hopefully we'll be able to see something in that space soon. And then I would say, even, you know, on Uber Eats, you guys just mentioned, last year we were successful in passing alcohol delivery. So, you know, potentially seeing how that could expand. Peter, I know you were in the restaurant business. Because food delivery is doing so well, restaurants are losing, right, on the drink, the alcohol consumption of folks walking through the door. How can we help restaurants make up for that loss with folks doing so much takeout if you could have that delivered with your meal? And so I'm just so excited because our platform is so diverse. There are the opportunities are endless. And so I think you're going to see a lot of exciting things coming out here soon.
I think one of the challenges, and I don't have to tell you this. I think one of the challenges is getting it also Uber for, you know, people that don't have debit cards or don't have the right kind of banking system, because that's such a huge, whether it be older seniors who are on a fixed income, who are, you know, and I know that was a bill that went through and we talked about that, but I think about so many people, you know, just working class folks that they may not even have the checking account to use Uber with. But you kind of think about it. It's like, you know, just to be quite honest, you know, and this is, here's, you know, another segment of Peter Opens Up, but it's like, I remember when I did not have a driver's license and I eventually got in trouble for driving on a suspended driver's license. If Uber had been around for those months while I was on that suspension, you know, I would not have gotten in trouble. I would have taken the $4.50, you know, fare on Uber. I couldn't do it on a taxi cab because it wasn't convenient. You couldn't plan on it. There wasn't enough drivers, et cetera. But I'm not saying it would have changed my life, but it would have, in a very small little fashion at that point, it would have saved me a lot. And I think about in this state, so many of the people who have suspended licenses, et cetera, and they want to just get to their working, you know, to their job, and they can't because they don't have reliable transportation. And maybe the bus doesn't get you to listen. If you are building a new set of townhomes that is almost purposely in an area that isn't connected to a a working transportation line yet for bus or rail. Mm-hmm. And so you need something that you can get you on that last mile and or last couple of miles. And so that to me is like when Uber solves that somehow, or and I know that you guys are working towards that. I think that that will be just a great day, not just for Uber, but for society writ large.
I agree. It's transportation's a barrier to so many things, careers, healthcare. There's so much more for us to work on, which is, I think, exciting because we're going to make a difference, but also it's a bit of job security. There's always something we can tackle.
Well, so session's over and you have been working very hard and you've been kind of tied to Tallahassee all through session. What is next for you as we are going into summer?
Into summer, I am going to be trying to go on the speaking circuit and talking at different conferences. I've recently been added a few states who are still in session. So I'll be traveling a bit out of state.
What are your new states?
So bit random, but I have Midwest states. I have Indiana, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and the Dakotas. One of the Dakotas is the
that makes so much sense. Like,
so they're going to fly you from Miami to Billings, and you're like, I'm Smith. Let's get this done.
I'm so excited. The last state to have rideshare is South Dakota. And
so you know, like everybody from Florida. I'm sorry.
The last state. Well, to have rideshare South Dakota. Go ahead, Stephanie. I'm sorry that he interrupted you.
No, I'm excited because we're working to bring rideshare to the 50th state or Uber to the 50th state. So
that'll be really cool when you accomplish that. Like, I brought rideshare to the 50th state. Like, that's something that she can hang her hat on. No, Peter.
No, I'm contemplating the meta discussion.
Wait, so they don't have Uber Eats in South Dakota?
No.
Whoa.
No.
I mean,
well, what are they going to do? Get buffalo bison from one part of.
Yes,
200 miles away. There's no restaurants anyways.
Listen, McDonald's, it made Mother's Day much easier for you to have McDonald's delivered via Uber Eats yesterday morning. That's what I wanted for breakfast.
All I was going to say was there are a lot of people in the process that somehow there's like a South Dakota like encampment out there. Like, I don't even remember. Like, Rachel Cohn is out there right now. Like, she's post-session. And I know Ryan and Mary Beth Tyson get out there. I know Paul and Sally Bradshaw. So there is like, you know, there's a whole process universe out in South Dakota.
I want to be a part of it. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't been out.
No, it's Montana. What am I talking about?
It's not South Dakota.
South Dakota.
I was just going to see how long it took you to figure out that you were absolutely wrong.
Which is the one with Mount Rushmore on it?
That's highlighting the point how kind of random Stephanie's new states are.
Wait a second. You can't Uber to Mount Rushmore? That's like a tourist community. They should have it.
I know. I'm working on it.
Wow.
Sioux Falls, Rapid City.
I think all of it. Wow. All right. So I've got to get my geography down. I'm sorry. I'm gonna get it all back now.
Well, think about. I mean, are those states TJ's been to yet? Because you can take him and introduce them to them.
That's exactly right. Nope, he's not. So that would be fun.
Well, I know this summer. I know that there is one person who really would like to see you at least once or twice. She's
about 4 feet tall.
She is. She's always dancing and twirling around, even like just like randomly through the house. Now, Ella just basically, she doesn't really walk. She just
dances.
She just dances through the house. She's doing this thing right now. Her favorite show is Elena of Avalor. And so she jumps onto the couch during the theme song.
She does a heel stretch.
And does a heel stretch.
At the end of the
to the end. And it's just like, Elena doesn't do a heel stretch, but it builds to it and it all makes sense. And so, like Michelle said, she always says, is that Stephanie who's your best friend, who's my best friend? And it's like, for the people that know Ella, she is shy. And I don't think Stephanie's
one of five people that she speaks
she
to that's
just
not a
loves
relative.
Stephanie Smith. She loves Stephanie Smith. So
she has such a sweet spirit, and I love spending time with her, and I cannot wait to see her in a few weeks.
That sounds good.
I will make sure not too much time goes by before I see her again.
And I can't wait to see TJ, but I have to practice, right? Because I have to call him Travis.
That's right. He is now Travis.
Trav.
I don't know if I can do it, Stephanie. I think I'm just going to have to apologize to him and be like, I'm really sorry. I can't do it.
You get a pass. You knew him as TJ Young. He's known you most of his entire life. So you'll get a pass.
Okay, good. All right, good.
All right, well, all we will see you soon.
We'll
let you get back
to it. We'll see you soon.
Thank you both.
Thank you. It's always so great to be able to talk to Stephanie. Not only is she my best friend, but she really was quite a mentor for me, and so much a part of my political career is tied up with her that it's nice to be able to celebrate her successes with her in a public forum. Of course, we are always very privately celebrating stuff because she's my person. She's who I go to relax and to just really be myself and not have any pretense with. She's just like one of the purest, best people there is in the process. So it was nice to kind of share that side of her with people who might not know that. I mean, I think everybody knows that she's a brilliant woman and that she is a great lobbyist and that she's super kind, but I don't know if they know really the depths of how amazing she is.
She is. I see it when I'm in Tallahassee. Like if there was a popularity award for who everyone likes to be around, she would be at the top of that list.
She's like, the Miss Congeniality for sure.
She is definitely the Miss Congeniality. She has a diverse array of people. She plays at the top of the game, you know, because, you know, the people that she's working with Uber directly, she's got her connections into the Black Legislative Caucus that people don't, you know. Listen, that isn't an automatic for a lot of people. She's got the South Florida tie right now, living in Miami. She's got the whole old ex-Christ world. You know, she's got Shane Strum and you and those folks.
And Eric Eichenberg.
And so she's got those connections. She's also, I think that other good people tend to gravitate to her. I really believe that. And so it is always, always, honestly, like, and you know this, and we said it in the interview, I don't go to hang out with her because I'm worried about anything. She and I go to Iluso and just hang out because we have the best conversations, and then we just end up getting this like motley crew of people all together. And so I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing her
in a couple of weeks. Do we have any housekeeping items?
I actually have a new housekeeping item I just want to bring up because I think this will be great for people who want to just like get to the podcast really quick. Google's new podcast focused search results have arrived in desktop browsers, and they were announced last week at Google's I/O. You can now search for our podcast directly in Google. So if you just go, he said, she said,
Florida,
it will pop up and you will be able to play it right there in Google. You don't have to go to iTunes. You don't have to have an app.
But please still go to iTunes and subscribe to us.
Correct.
And please give us 5-star reviews because that's still the main way people are going to find us.
Well, but this is also important for, like, we have a lot of topics that we talk about and they're just floating out into the ether right now.
Right.
Eventually, they're going to be searchable.
Right.
And people are going to be able to go back and get.
Megan's great transcribing work is going to really pay off.
It will pay off.
Right.
As we're going to have this, you know, like Jeff Brandis on Uber or what he's talking about. That is going to one day be searchable. And anytime people can get to the podcast very quickly, I think that that's a big development, not just for
mastery
our podcast,
for
everybody. Yeah, I don't even, some of the stuff.
I know, I'm going to go research that and start learning now.
Well, he was the first
if
one.
Jeff says it's next, I'm going to read up on it.
He told me about, what was it, you know, the MOOCs or whatever, when you're able to take education, there's like 3,000 people in it and they can do it to 30,000. It's like MMOC. I forget
what
the acronym is. The education people will know what it is. It's when somebody can basically give a lecture to 20,000 people at a variety of schools.
Got it.
It brings down, especially on like the basic, like geography 1000, you don't need a teacher there. You need one teacher for 10 schools. Or that would be the argument. So, of course, give our Facebook page a look. I think we're getting more and more active on there. It's kind of, I like the outlet right there.
Yeah, we're trying to get more active there. As we're getting our footing here, we're trying to engage more there. And we welcome more engagement from you guys there. We always welcome feedback on the podcast, suggestions for some upcoming guests you would like us to have on, and some topics you'd like us to talk about. feel free to let us know on the Facebook page, and we will see what we can do about making those things happen.
I think, again, I keep likening this to when I first started blogging, and the technology was still developing. Remember, I was at St. Peter's Blog 1.blogspot.com before we're now at Florida Politics. And we quickly have passed that by, but just a reminder to everybody who's, you know, deciding what to subscribe to. Today is better than yesterday with the podcast. We want it to be better the next time. So we really need your feedback. How do we sound? What do you think? Send us a message, email us, tell us, hey, can you get in this guest? I think that I'd love to come on. Feel free to suggest yourself. Like, this is only going to work.
Well, that's, you know, last week we had Senator Bradley on, and the reason why we had him on is because he texted you to give us feedback on the podcast. And so you said, do you want to come on? That's kind of how it works sometimes. It's a little bit of a fluid process, and we really appreciate you guys being involved with it with us.
I was at,
Tiger Bay,
and it's not that they're saying that they're listening to it. They're like citing.
They're citing specific parts of it.
And it's different. Like I still haven't figured out what everybody loves you. Everybody loves when you bust my balls. That would be number one. If we had a podcast just called Michelle Busts Peter's Balls, that would be even.
Well, that was part of Ella's Mother's Day card she made for me at school. She highlighted that I bust your balls, and she's not wrong.
She's not wrong. Okay.
So do you have any hot takes?
All right. So here's my dangerous hot take. I just want to get everybody ready for this because it's happening in 2 weeks. Memorial Day is about Memorial Day, people who have died in service to this country. It's really not about Veterans Day. We have Veterans Day in November, and we should honor those people who have served then. But I think that there becomes a commingling of Veterans Day and Memorial Day. It should definitely be a patriotic day. I would love for it to be more about us remembering our fallen instead of it being just about barbecues.
And the reasons they sacrificed.
But I see it already happening where Memorial Day has turned into this. And I bring it up because I'm reading right now about how President Trump has hijacked July 4th. He is going to take over the entire Washington, D.C. proceedings. He's going to deliver a speech to the country, which is fine, but we know what that speech will be like. But he has taken, you know, the fireworks on the mall into now a Trump production. There is enough false patriotism in this country. Let's remember Memorial Day for what it really is.
Yeah, let's really take the time to honor the people who paid the ultimate price for our freedom.
What's your hot take for the...
Well, I think we have a little bit of a theme. My hot take also involves a holiday.
Okay.
But it involves Mother's Day. I feel like we are just getting a little bit too politically correct in this country and wanting to not hurt anyone's feelings when it comes to our holidays. So there was this, people were sharing this meme of different flowers you should give to different types of moms to celebrate Mother's Day. And I get like, so flowers for someone who is a mom, so flowers for an expectant mother, flowers for someone who lost their mother. Flowers for someone who wants to be a mother but has been unable to get pregnant and is suffering infertility. But the one that really enrages me is flowers for people who have chosen not to be a mom.
Right. All of the ones you said up until that part.
All the other ones deserve it.
They deserve your sympathy.
But they deserve acknowledgement on Mother's Day. But women who have chosen not to be a mother, you don't get Mother's Day.
Right. This is
the
one day.
Do you know how you get to participate in Mother's Day if you've chosen not to be a mother? You celebrate your mother. But Mother's Day is not the all-inclusive holiday. It is a day for mothers. And again, I am not saying we don't celebrate people who have suffered miscarriage.
I thought that was actually when I saw those, it made me think like Mother's Day is a hard day for a lot of people.
It is a really hard day. And I don't want to take
it away. It's a hard
day
for me.
It is a hard day for you. It absolutely is. And, you know, I kept checking in on one of my friends who lost her mother earlier this year. It's her first Mother's Day without her mother.
Yeah.
So I get all of that, but the one category that doesn't deserve to get acknowledged and celebrated on Mother's Day is the women who have chosen not to be mothers.
What was Saturday, by the way? Because that's my favorite.
Oh, and that's also what's not part of Mother's Day. Dog moms, you don't get Mother's Day. You have a day. In fact, Animal Mother's Day is on May 11th. It is a set day. So guess what, guys? That's your day. Please stop trying to take Mother's Day. I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say it, but mothers put themselves last every day of the year.
I thought that your editorial cartoon that you attached to an Instagram to your, you said to your fellow,
to my mother tribe.
And it's right. Like if we, and I've said this 1,000 times, I'm not trying to butter up. Like you are, you serve so many roles in our house. Like you said it earlier, cruise director, like we wouldn't even know. We would just like, and not just us, it would be Papa Ben and Coco. Like, you know, in terms of like, when is the recital? You know, and you talk about like, I thought about it, like I was petrified. I had Ella for 3.5 hours on, and I thought I had Ella for 3.5 hours. And I,
on Saturday, while I went to the spa,
I took her to, so we went swimming. I'm petrified for that first couple of minutes because I'm like, oh, wait a second. Like she's
going to
be.
You don't even know where her bathing suit's
at. I don't know how to dry her. I'm like, all right. So I put her in the towel and then what do I do with her? Like, because she usually snuggles you.
Right.
When you're, and that's how you guys dry off is she gets in our bed wet.
She wants mama snuggles. She's in a towel. She's wet. We're under the blanket together. And that's how she dries off. Right.
And then think about it. So now she's out of the pool and her hair is now destroyed for the day. And so I'm like looking.
How
I'm
did
like,
you figure out how to brush it, or did you just not?
I love to brush her hair, but it's not the same as when you
did
brush
you,
it.
Did you use the conditioning spray?
No. And then we get to the bowling alley, and I'm looking at her. I'm like, who is this feral child that I brought with?
You mean it's a Target, not the bowling alley.
To Target, and so I just realized I'm like, you know, just like this small, that small little thing, and I'm just thinking about like,
yeah, like the meme I posted was like, enjoy Mother's Day. We've brought in some professionals to help fill your role while you're gone. So there is a clergyman, there's a doctor, there's a taxi car driver, there's a teacher.
Ella had a little ear problem last night that we don't even know what it resolved itself. And I was amazing because I ended up taking a shower, but you got her ibuprofen. Like if you were not,
how many milligrams of ibuprofen does Ella need?
5,000.
Well, she would be dead. How much does Ella weigh?
40 pounds?
53. Okay. So, I mean, you would have if you had looked at the dosing chart on the back of the ibuprofen, you would have given her 5 milliliters less. You would have given her 5 milliliters instead of the 10 milliliters that she needs.
It is. My favorite movie about parenthood is Mr. Mom. And it really is like, you just have no.
Would you have given her ibuprofen or Tylenol for an earache?
I probably would have taken a plunger to her ear and like tried to cup it and like, let's just get it here, Q-tip it. And like, I would have had and that's why I take her into the shower. My end all solution for anything, like, you get a fever? Let's just jump in the shower. I mean, if
what it does, and it's helpful, like when Ella is congested and we need the steam to help get the mucus out
of
her
system. Well, and she's like me. She's a water baby where like the...
So Ella does. Whenever she doesn't feel good, she wants to get in the shower in the middle of the night. And well, that is not how I do things. So Peter is who has to do those middle of the night showers. At midnight last night, Peter and I had just probably fallen into our deep REM sleep when she came down writhing in pain. It was pretty upsetting. And I just knew that she needed 10 minutes for the ibuprofen to kick in and the shower was 10 minutes. So it accomplished that.
And so I jumped in the shower and... That's probably the most scary thought for this podcast.
Here's what I'm saying. All I have to say is people who have chosen not to be mothers, you don't know what any of that means. You don't get Mother's Day. That's my hot take.
Well, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you.
This has been He Said.
She Said.